Fast Eddie in the studios of EAA Radio here with three representatives of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Introduce yourselves.
Yep, my name is Bob Oma. I'm a controller at Indianapolis Center, Air Route Control Center.
Hi, my name is Carrie Phillips, and I'm an air traffic controller at Boston Center.
Hi, my name is Jim Thompson. I'm an air traffic controller at Southern California Approach Control.
That's a diverse crew here all across the country. You do a very important job here. Your job is to keep all the air traffic apart. You're working a lot with general aviation. Are there any tips or anything that you would like to pass on to general aviation pilots out there?
Yeah, I think one of the, you know, the biggest things that we've been stressing at our time in Oshkosh, not just this year, but in the past, is don't be afraid to call us. We see a lot of times with GA aviation that they tend not to want to talk to air traffic controllers, which they don't have to if they're not in controlled airspace, and that's fine. But we also see instances where they will fly into restricted airspace, fly into thunderstorms, and we're not talking to them. So all we can do when we're sitting at the scope is just call out in the blind and see if they're listening. And if they're not listening, there's nothing that we can do to help them. We don't see as much VFR flight following probably as we'd like to see. I know as a pilot myself, I fly, whenever I fly, I always have VFR flight following. There's never a time I don't fly with, you know, without it. So, and one of the biggest things we're stressing here is to talk to us. We're not the scary, you know, boogeyman. We're nice people. We love pilots. We love aviation. So that's one of those things we're stressing. And another thing, too, with the general aviation community we've found lately is they let themselves tend to get a little bit too deep into situations before they admit they need help. Especially when it comes to weather, thunderstorms, icing. Even sometimes we can hear it in their voice that something's going on, and then we're ready for it almost, but then they kind of admit later on that, hey, I'm in trouble. I'm too close to a thunderstorm. I've gotten, now I'm at moderate icing, where if they told us they were in light icing, we would be able to, you know, get forecasting reports, get icing levels, freezing levels for them, and try to help them get them out sooner. So that's one thing that we're really kind of stressing this week is to A, you know, don't be afraid to talk to us, and B, when you are talking to us, let us know what's going on, and especially if something is starting to go south.
Well, they also have that that NASA thing where if they make a mistake, they can file a report, and that, you know, that's kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily even that so much. It's like if we talk about weather, it's not that they're doing anything wrong per se. I mean, you know, when you're flying along and you start to get some icing, or if you're flying along and you're starting to get a little bit hazy, you're not nothing wrong yet. You're not breaking any laws or anything. But if you tell us that, we can start looking ahead for you, start getting airports that are VFR, start, you know, talking to our meteorologists in our facilities, seeing where the VFR conditions are. So those are things that we can start being proactive if we know what's going on.
I think the big thing that we wanted to stress is that we're all on the same team. Safety is our number one priority, and we're not looking to get anybody in trouble. We're not the air police, or we're not looking to find rule breakers or anything like that. That's our job is to help, and so we would love for them to call up and take advantage of that service.
Well, you have flight following. You can give traffic advisories, and I imagine there's a lot of other things that you can tell the pilots, too. Typically, if you have a pilot that gets on the radio and says, hey, I'm lost, what do you do to help them out?
I mean, that's actually one of those things. We have multiple things we can do depending on the situation and where the pilot is. I mean, the easiest thing we can do and the quickest way to find out where you are is if you squawk 7700, if you squawk emergency, right? And that will pop up on everyone's scope. Everyone can see squawk codes like 7600, 7700. So that we'll be able to triangle you almost instantly if you do that. Now, we can do other things, getting a DME fix off of VOR, even looking outside your cockpit, saying, what are you seeing? Are you seeing a river? Are you seeing a road? And kind of triangulate from there. So there's multiple ways we can help aircraft who are lost.
Well, that's good. I mean, getting lost, you would think it doesn't happen in this day and age of GPS-equipped aircraft, but I'm still hearing stories out there of the occasional student pilot gets a little
lost. I can
lost.
Share a story with that. I when I was flying at the University of North Dakota, I was in helicopter training, and I was flying a Schweitzer 300, and I got lost. So I was lost, and I didn't know what to do, and you shouldn't do what I did. I landed on an interstate to figure out where I was. I went down and landed to figure out what road sign it was and what mile marker and took off again. So I would highly recommend not doing that when you're student pilot training. Probably not a good idea. But that's one of those instances where, like, if you were to call air traffic control, you don't have to put yourself in a bad position. We can easily find you and let you know where you are and get you on your way.
Well, we're all just human. We do sometimes have a tendency to get in over our head, and it's good to know that you guys are out there. Now, what are the advantages of having flight following if you're a VFR pilot?
The possibilities are endless, from weather advisories, traffic calls, you know, you name it. And if we don't have the information readily available in front of us, we can find somebody who does.
Yeah, I wanted to add into that. I work at Southern California TRACON. We do 2 million operations a year, and I do a lot of pilot outreach. I do a lot of safety briefings, and I find, you know, we kind of touched on what we were talking earlier. I didn't realize how many pilots thought that we didn't want to talk to them and that they were bothering us because we're so busy, but it's actually quite the opposite. Like, I would rather be talking to you, to be able to give you that traffic advisory, to move you out of the way. It's a lot easier for me if I know what you're doing and if I'm talking to you. My area, it's SoCal's led the nation in TCAS resolution advisories for the last 3 years running because of that. We have practice areas, a lot of flight clubs out there, and it's something we're working on every day to get better at.
Yeah, another example of flight following, too, is something we see all over the country is restricted areas. So we can tell you if a MOA is hot, if a MOA is cold, if you're going to be going into an actual restricted area. For example, the airspace I work is near Fort Knox. So we have a restricted area over Fort Knox that's always active, and you know, you can't go in. And we've had a couple times where VFR, you can see the VFR target that flies right through an active MOA or an active restricted area in Fort Knox. And what pilots don't really understand with that is if the military is having an active exercise, like for Fort Knox, they do 2-, 3-, 4-day multi-million-dollar exercises, live fires with, you know, tanks and Apaches. The minute a VFR target will enter that airspace, they have to shut the whole exercise down and stop it. And so really what you've done in a 3-day exercise is, if you're halfway through the exercise, it's over. It's done. And then the exercise is just null and void. And so those are things that if you're talking to air traffic, we will tell you, hey, just so you know, at your 12 o'clock and 10 miles, there's an active restricted area, and we'll advise you to turn left or turn right.
In other words, you'd be able to vector them around that restricted area.
Correct. And we'll give them advisories. You know, we'll tell you, for example, a MOA. If a MOA is hot, you can fly through a MOA. I mean, as a pilot, I would recommend you highly don't, because once you enter a MOA, you're in the military sandbox. And once you enter the military sandbox, they're going to come play. And so if you're going through a MOA, there's a good chance and your 172 is going to be buzzed by F-16s, F-18s. We see it all the time. We'll see targets that are 50 miles away immediately start, you know, going right towards that VFR target because you've entered their playground. And if you enter the playground of a fighter, they're going to come play. So, you know, we will always advise pilots with a MOA, you're going to want to stay away if you're VFR.
I was going to say, that's got to be quite a thrilling experience. You're buzzing along in a 172, and here comes an F-18 or an F-16 or something rather mighty coming up on you and saying, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's we talk to pilots, and they're quite surprised that happened, and we kind of explain to them, well, you have to understand, again, that's their reserved airspace. Even though you're allowed to fly through it VFR, it's not recommended. And so those are things, again, that we can do, and we can even call weather out ahead. So something where I know a lot of GA pilots, like myself, I fly with ADS-B and for flight and those type of things, but we still have a large community that doesn't have that. So if you want to know what the weather looks like 50 miles ahead, 100 miles ahead, even 150, we can range out and look and give you an idea of what's coming up ahead. So that's it's a service, and the GA community is already paying for it. Like, their tax dollars are paying for it, right? We're here to serve pilots. Our job is to help them. As a pilot, I figure, why not use that service? I'm already paying for it.
Well, you know, another important duty that you have too is in case of an emergency, you know, pilot with a, you know, mechanical problem, low on fuel, or just anything, you know, where he cries out and says, "Mayday." You know, you guys are right there. What kind of services can you offer for a pilot who does declare a mayday?
Well, and we can offer just pretty much about anything, really. It's a case-by-case basis. With an emergency, you know, depending on what the emergency is, we can give them suggestions. So if they have a rough-running engine, we may say, is your carb heat on? Maybe they're so saturated in the cockpit they forgot to turn their carb heat on. If it's low fuel, we'll give them the nearest airport that has fuel services. One of the big ones we see is VFR and IFR. And that's one of the, you know, one of the deadly causes of GA accidents is when a VFR aircraft will fly into IFR. So we will, if we have a controller that's not a pilot, we'll call a pilot in, one of the controller pilots, and they'll come over and assist the pilot, you know, keep your wings level, you know, get everything calmed down in the cockpit, and then slowly turn. You know, we do a turn first and maybe a descent, try to get you out of the IFR conditions. And that being said, with emergencies, though, the biggest thing is if you're already talking to us, we know where you are, we know what kind of aircraft you are. I mean, those things are already taken care of. Now, if you call out of the blind with emergency, I need to figure out who you are, where you are, and those may be valuable seconds or minutes that could make a difference between whether your outcome is a positive or a negative. And that's one of those things. That's why I always fly with VFR flight following, because that way I've already got those steps done. They know where I am. They know who I am. You know, they know where I am and who I am.
actually have a real-time story about that. Last week, I was working the final control into Burbank Airport, and I had an aircraft transitioning from the north through Class Bravo Airspace, Los Angeles Bravo, and he got about a beam Van Nuys, and he reported a sputtering engine. He wanted to land immediately. He asked me his options. So it gave me, because I was talking to Marty, it gave me time to get the Burbank final out of the way, spin him around one time, and get him on the deck safely at Van Nuys. And before I shipped him to the tower, he said, you know, man, I'm really glad I called you guys for flight following today, because I wouldn't have thought about landing at Van Nuys. So, I mean, it's just another advantage of calling us and talking to us.
Yeah, and the important thing with flight following, too, you have to remember it's a priority of service type situation. So, yeah, if you're at Oshkosh this week and you're leaving, you're going to try to get flight following with Milwaukee Approach, you're not going to get it. Milwaukee Approach is too saturated, they can't do it. But on a normal day, depending on how busy we are, if we are so busy at that point we can't give you that service, we will come back to you when we can. So we'll say, you know, number 123, can you stand by? But we will come to you. It's not that we're going to forget about you and we don't want to talk to you.
Sounds great. Where can they get more information on what air traffic controllers can provide for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best resource would be go to NATCA.org. It's our organization, NACA. We're the National Air Traffic Controller Association, so it's a union that represents all the air traffic controllers. And on that website, there's plenty of information. You can get all sorts of different things you can see from us. And one thing, you know, and last thing I'd like to say for the pilots out there who are listening, if they are kind of curious what it's like to be a controller, or even how it affects their specific area, go ahead and call your local tower, call your local center, and set up a tour. I think once more pilots start to meet us, they'll realize that we're pretty nice people. We have crazy haircuts. We like to have the occasional beverage from time to time. We're really nice people. And again, our sole purpose is to help pilots and help airplanes.
You've been listening to Rob Obma from the Indy Center, Kerry Phillips from Boston Center, and Jim Thompson from San Diego. Not a bad place to be. And this is Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio.